Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Hey, it's Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host today, hardened criminal, Brian Johnson. What's it like on the inside, Brian?
I'm glad I didn't get put in the clink. Got pulled over on the way over here.
You got pulled over on the way over here.
Probably the slowest I've driven in the last 20 years.
Was it a Leon Lett size stash in the back of your car?
I got away with a warning, thankfully. But yeah, I don't know. Just
what got you? State
bad
was
luck.
Was it a local
state
cop?
Trooper?
Was it a state trooper.
70, and he's like, he was precise. 73. Grant, okay. I thought it was a 65, and thankfully, I didn't fully accelerate to where I wanted to be at, which is like, you know, low 80s, definitely. I mean, come on, raise the speed limits. But he was a nice guy. Gave me a warning.
You got off easy.
I was
you can't really complain.
No, I'm not complaining.
Maybe he's a listener.
But I was like, I know you're gonna check in on me soon because I am very punctual when it comes to these podcasts.
No, you are. When you were 10 minutes late, I'm like, this is weird.
Yep, something's amiss.
This is not like the Brian Johnson I know. But the Brian Johnson I know also would never have gotten pulled over with a Leon Lett-sized stash in the back of his car.
I'm just running into bad luck left and right lately. I got good things on the horizon, hopefully. But
yeah, like the scales will balance out, yeah. Right?
I'm going to go buy.
Like this podcast.
I'll go buy some lotto tickets after this.
There you go. Last week, we broke down the offseason winners. Mm-hmm. This week, we're doing the losers. These are the guys we think have the opportunity to perform worse than hope because of things that changed in the offseason. These are guys that didn't change teams,
right,
but had their situation change.
Resident losers.
Resident evil. Because like these bad things happened.
And I can contest. I'm turning into more and more of a best ball junkie every year. I've been drafting since January. I was drafting
which I love.
2022 yes. During the 2021 playoffs. And
right.
All of these guys, their ADP has slid for reasons that we will mention for each since free agency and trading and the draft and all that stuff.
Let's start with the quarterbacks. We've got four quarterbacks we think have taken a hit in the offseason, beginning with Patrick Mahomes, for probably obvious reasons. He is still, however, quarterback two going off the board in round three right now.
Yeah, obvious reason, really, right? Tyreek Hill basically getting traded to Miami. And looking back through Mahomes' career, not a long career by any means, but he's played five games without Tyreek Hill. 8 passing touchdowns in those 5 games.
Not great.
Not great.
Not terrible. I mean, 1.8 per is not terrible.
Even worse, 4 of those 8 touchdowns came in one quarter against the Oakland Raiders. Like when I watched the highlights too, when the dirt was still in the field from the baseball season.
Okay.
So it was just kind of a fluky game against an awful Raiders team. Half of those 8 touchdowns, one quarter.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, his ADP is probably still two, but I've seen him slide now to QB3, QB4. It's really everyone's taking Josh Allen first.
Yep.
But now it's kind of like, do you want Mahomes? Or are you going to go with Herbert or even Lamar Jackson? Some before it was slam dunk. Mahomes was number two.
Yeah.
Some might still even were taking him before Allen. Not the vast minority were, but ever since the Hill trade, people are down on him and for rightful
long term. I believe Mahomes' value should be higher without Tyreek Hill. Here's why. Okay. One, I'm a believer in Sky Moore. And yeah. He's not Tyreek Hill. No. Nobody's Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's a totally special case, but I think Sky Moore can be very effective. Two, they saved $100 million that they're able to put into other places to help Patrick Mahomes and sustain his career. Offensive line, you know, whatever. Replacement tight ends, you know, whatever that case is. I still think Mahomes has got tremendous long-term value.
And Justin Ross, he's got the talent. If he's medically clear to, you know, carry forth in his career, mm-hmm. arguably not a draft day steal, just an out because he wasn't drafted.
Right.
If he pans out, yeah, Ross and Moore easily could replace Tyreek Hill.
The next quarterback loser is a name that you already mentioned, Lamar Jackson, currently going off the board as quarterback 4 in round 4. At that point, you're paying a premium on him under the assumption that his rather lackluster year last year will improve this year, but it's not obvious to see how that's going to happen. Now, he's in the last year of his rookie deal, Brian, and Lamar Jackson does not have a new contract. It's not clear that he will be paid what he wants to be paid or what he thinks he should be paid. Normally, a quarterback as good as Lamar Jackson, A, never even hits the last year of their contract.
Right.
And then B, when they do, they get paid a lot. They get paid like a top five guy, even if you're not a top five quarterback. Lamar Jackson has one playoff win to his credit to this point, and not that that's the only measuring stick, because it's not. But it's not clear that he will get a new contract. And if the Ravens underproduce this year, if they go one and out in the playoffs or don't make the playoffs, who knows what his situation might be. But the real key here is the loss of Marquise Brown and the fact that the team replaced Marquise Brown with
nobody,
literally nobody. The Ravens have got, I think, the thinnest set of wide receivers in the league. The entire position group, get this, the entire position group on the Ravens has 131 NFL receptions. That's it. 131.
That's how many catches Mark Andrews almost had last year, probably.
Yeah, probably almost that many by himself.
At least he's got him. Season. But
I will note there is this, though. Improvements to the Ravens' offensive line is huge. Jackson took a ton of sacks. In fact, I think he had the highest sack rate in the NFL among all quarterbacks. And they put a first-round pick into center Tyler Linderbaum. They added Kevin Zeitler, he was Pro Football Focus's 10th rated guard last year, and they picked up Morgan Moses on the right-hand side, and on that same side, they drafted enormous rookie tackle
Maafala.
Maafala.
Mountain man.
6'8". 360 pounds. I mean, it's ridiculous.
The Ravens have drafted a lot of golden gophers, going way back to Ron Johnson, if you recall, Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, good point.
Max Williams, Rashad Bateman. There's been a bunch.
There have been a bunch.
I'm forgetting some other ones.
So, overall, this is the receiver set is so thin here. To me, it really does put some pause before I draft Lamar Jackson. Sure, the running is great, but I really need him to augment that with better, more consistent passing than he had last year, and he doesn't even have the weapons he had last year.
And what doesn't bode well for Jackson, it bodes well for Baltimore from a reality football perspective, is that defense is probably going to be one of the better defenses in the NFL. And so when it comes to fantasy, that doesn't usually equate to a ton of scoring or the need to score a lot.
The next quarterback loser, Ryan Tannehill, currently going off the board as quarterback 21 in the 14th round. It feels like people have already baked in a pretty big drop for Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and this is another big name receiver leaving the team, A.J. Brown, of course. In his 3 years with Tennessee, Tannehill has touchdown totals of 22, 33-21. He had that one really good year in 2020 when he had the 33. A.J. Brown accounted for nearly a third of all those passing scores. And, of course, he's in Philly now. And we can debate who Tennessee's top wide receiver is. Is it rookie Treylon Burks? Is it Robert Woods, who's looked good in OTAs, but still not sure if he's going to be ready to go come week one? So the loss of Brown is a downgrade either way. I'm not saying I'm out on Burks or Woods, but yeah, losing A.J. Brown hurts. And now Tannehill, a threat on the ground, of course, scored 7 rushing touchdowns last season.
Shocking. Yes.
6 of those 7 came after Derrick Henry went down with a broken foot.
Yeah, that says a lot.
Henry should be back, ready to go week one. And you know who else is a threat on the ground outside of Derrick Henry? Malik Willis, who is not going to challenge him, Tannehill, right away. Mm-hmm. But they get off to a slow start. They kind of probably have similar skill sets. And if, you know, the Titans, they're no lock to take that division down. I think the Colts are the heavy favorite, and I think Jacksonville's going to be much improved. And
my worry is, what if they bring in Malik Willis at the stripe, the Saints did?
Yeah. Or even what the Raiders did with Marcus Mariota, took some touchdown opportunities from Derek Carr.
Yeah.
That's very plausible. So, yeah, Tannehill's ADP has slid as a result of all those things.
The last quarterback loser is Justin Fields. Chicago might be the worst team in the league this year. I think there's a possibility that they just bottom out right here, that this is going to be the bottom for them. If not the Ravens, who I said earlier have the thinnest set of receivers, then it's probably Chicago.
Yeah.
You've got Darnell Mooney in his third year. He's got 142 career receptions, which, granted, is more than all of the Ravens receivers combined. I guess that makes him an aged veteran here. But after Mooney, it's all third tier cast-offs and long shots. Dante Pettis, Byron Pringle, Equanimeous St. Brown, and then old man
Velus Jones.
Yeah,
rookie old man.
Universally decried rookie draft pick Velus Jones.
I had never even heard of the guy until he was drafted. And I thought I knew everything you need to know, at least about rookies getting drafted in the first 5 rounds.
It's because he went about 5 rounds too early.
Yeah.
Which would have put him out of the draft.
Any round was a round too early.
Offensive line was bad last year, and they just didn't bring in a lot of help. They picked up Green Bay's backup center, Patrick Lucas, but then they added Dakota Dozier, 2 6th-round picks and a 7th-round pick. That's it. I mean, nothing. They put no help around Justin Fields at all. They've taken sort of like the opposite approach of the Jets, who have done everything possible to put Zach Wilson in a position to succeed. The Bears seem to be doing the exact opposite for Justin Fields, despite the heavy price they paid to get him last year. Let's go to the running back position, Brian.
All right.
And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 running back losers to get through.
A lot of losers.
Oh, man.
We'll be quick through these. It's somewhat obvious.
I think some are. Javonte Williams for a while was looking like one of the biggest winners of the offseason.
Yep.
And then after not signing for over a month, Melvin Gordon comes back.
Yeah.
Right back to last year.
Earlier in the winter, everyone was under the presumption that Melvin Gordon was going to be gone and Williams was going to be a bell cow. He was going late first round in best ball drafts. Now he's going late second, early third, because Gordon is back. And they both averaged 15.1 opportunities, targets plus carries per game last year. And it's probably going to be the same old story this year, and it's a shame.
Javonte Williams this week said it was going to be the same old story. He said he expects the exact same thing as last year.
Yeah, Williams and Gordon combined for 2,350 combo yards and 17 total touchdowns last year, and that was supposed to be all Williams this year. And that was with they were facing numerous stacked boxes with Teddy Bridgewater, quarterback.
Right,
Russell Wilson is going to open things up.
Yep.
But we're looking at a platoon here. So, yeah, Williams, fortunately, we're going to have to wait at least one more season for full-on bell cow Javonte Williams, unless Gordon gets injured.
The next running back loser is something that some will disagree with. He's currently going off the board at running back 14 in the third round, and that's Leonard Fournette. Tampa Bay loses Ronald Jones, but in my mind, that's no loss. I mean, Ronald Jones is a total non-factor here, but incoming rookie Rashad White is very promising, and he's got the do-everything skill set that fits very well with Tampa, and he can do most and many of the same things that Leonard Fournette can. And, you know, Fournette was the only game in town last year, but, you know, White could really turn this into a 1-2 punch, potentially, and Tampa has shown a willingness to use rookies extensively. Look at Antoine Winfield, Tristan Wirfs, Devin White as recent examples. Now, those are I think they're all first rounders. I think even Winfield was a first rounder, or early second rounder. But you know, they drafted White in a position of real equity in the draft. And I think he's going to be a factor here much more than Ronald Jones has been. And I think he's going to chisel away into some of Leonard Fournette's usage. And I will continue to maintain Leonard Fournette just isn't that special of a runner. I think he's just a guy. Yep. But Tom Brady
touches a game
him.
And that,
yeah, that helps a lot. Yeah. And he was the starting running back and really the only game in town in a Tom Brady led offense. So he still has real value, but I do think White is a bit of a factor. Let's go to Seattle. Rashad Penny, throughout his entire career, it's all been injury plagued and underperforming until December of last year.
Yeah.
When he went berserk down the stretch.
And if you listen to Fantasy Football Weekly, as I'm assuming everyone hearing this podcast does, you got the peacock button bar because I told you to add Rashad Penny before the Houston game when he went off. No, not that one. We're going to need that one later, though. Bookmark the sad Trombowski bar. But Penny closed the season very strong, was arguably a league winner. He had the most yards per carry of all running backs at 6.3 in 2021. Nick Chubb was second with 5.5. He was second in yards created per attempt among running backs who had at least 100 rushing attempts. Rashad Penny, that is. He looked great. But like you said, Kenneth Walker in town now. You have to assume he's going to eat into 40, 50% of those touches. The loss of Russell Wilson is also going to hurt Rashad Penny. They're going to be facing those stacked boxes that the Broncos were facing last year. So, Rashad Penny, people were drafting him, assuming he was going to be RB1, but he didn't dodge the landmines on draft day. And he stepped on one of the biggest ones in Kenneth Walker. So
he's RB35 right now. I think that's too high. I don't trust Penny. And I like what I saw at the end of last year. Don't trust that offense, and they put massive draft, a team that needed help everywhere, put massive draft equity into the running back position right up against Penny.
Yeah, you can't argue that they don't trust him to stay healthy because he hasn't. Yeah. We hope he does, but we'll see what happens.
Going two picks before Rashad Penny at running back 33, Chase Edmonds in Miami. He's locked into the NFL's ugliest committee, Brian, with Sony Michel, Raheem Mostert, Miles Gaskin, Salvon Ahmed, and now Chase Edmonds. Edmonds going off the board at 33. This thing's way dicier than Rashad Penny, even. Any of these guys could get carries at any moment right here. And what's more, Chase Edmonds has played 57 career games. You know how many goal line carries he's had inside the 5-yard line in 57 games?
I know it's not a lot.
Six in 57 games. So one out of every 9.5 games, he gets a try from inside the 5. 9.5 games. He just doesn't score touchdowns. I think this is one of the worst buys out there, even at pick 33. At running back 33, round 8, shouldn't be that important, but you could do so much better.
Yeah, I remember last year, Miami, you're like, oh, this is a Miles Gaskin game. And then it was Salvin Ahmed. And then sometimes it's a Salvin Ahmed game. Right. Then Duke Johnson goes off.
Right.
And now it's even worse. So I'm totally with you.
I would, if I had to pick one guy from this rotation in Miami, and I wouldn't, at least I'm not likely to, it'd be Raheem Mostert because he goes off the board 5 rounds later, run at round 13.
Yeah.
And he's got the history with Mike McDaniel. And we've seen Raheem Mostert, when healthy, he can be a special back. So I would draft Mostert, ride him until he inevitably gets hurt, because he always does, and then move on.
I'm with you.
Our next loser running back, not loser in life, just off-season loser, Devin Singletary, going off the board at running back 28, round 7.5-8.
Yeah, another running back who powered fantasy teams to victory late in the season last year. 6 total touchdowns from weeks 15 through 18. Also posted decent receiving numbers during that stretch and into the playoffs. But here comes James Cook, who had one drop on 74 career targets at Georgia. Mm. Buffalo has also signed Duke Johnson, who if he makes the team, he's going to be a third down option as well, meaning Singletary never sees a third down snap ever again, most likely. Now, that's hyperbole, of course, but it's not looking good for his bell cow usage that we saw late in 2021. And that's the bottom line. We're just looking at, first down, second down work. And of course, Josh Allen near the stripe. They probably don't want to keep running him at the stripe, but he will, just because he's Josh Allen and no one can stop him. And people can stop Devin Singletary. So another guy, ADP has gone slid. big time.
The next running back offseason loser, Antonio Gibson, currently going up the board, I think, way too high. Running back 13, round 3. Ron Rivera says he's planning to integrate rookie Brian Robinson into the backfield with a significant role, and this week called it a 1-2 punch and likened his backfield to the days of Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. That would be bad for Antonio Gibson, and Robinson is built for goal line carries. He's a bigger, more of a power back, and that could impact Gibson's fantasy fortune significantly in a touch and a reduced touchdown total here. Gibson last year, they had 17 carries inside the five, which is a lot. Turned it into just 6 touchdowns.
And of course, J.D. McKissic is going to see a ton of third down work.
Yep, great point. Michael Carter, massive offseason loser here.
Yep. We all know Jets drafted Breece Hall, the top running back taken in the last April's draft. Carter missed 5 games due to injury last year, so hasn't proved to be fully durable either. And when he was given those several bell cow opportunities, he just looked kind of like a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And really, his good games came with Mike White at quarterback. They were leaning on just, you know, dumping off the ball to Carter out of the backfield. So, yeah, Michael Carter, he was someone you would hope the Jets weren't going to take a big name running back, but they took the biggest name running back. So
they did.
Big owie for Michael Carter.
I want to be clear that everybody loves Austin Ekeler. We love him as a player. We love the fact that he overtly plays fantasy football, loves fantasy football. We've been touting him on this show for 3 years, and then the payoff finally hit big time last year with his 20 touchdown season. His ADP is pick 2. And it's only relative to that ADP that I discuss Austin Ekeler here. In his 5 NFL seasons, Ekeler has been a workhorse back one time, and only one, and it was last year when he roughly doubled his normal rushing attempt usage while maintaining his effectiveness through the air. But Ekeler could easily lose touches to 4th-round pick Isaiah Spiller. Mm-hmm. Spiller was projected as a day 2 second-round pick, but slumped to the 4th round mostly because he ran a 4.640 at his pro day. But if you watch the tape, the kid can run, and he's a good player. And the fact that they put even 4th round equity tells me that they must like Spiller at least some. And they let Justin Jackson go. I think that's another sign as well. And I just fear that Eckler's workload is going to get cut into more significantly this year than it did last year when nobody else could be effective. Remember, Joe Lombardi only gave Alvin, he's the offensive coordinator for the Chargers, only gave Alvin Kamara between 171 and 194 carries when he was the starter in New Orleans. 171 to 194. That would represent about a 30-ish carry regression for Ekeler if he drops down to Kamara levels. And while that doesn't torpedo his value by any means, it's not the end of the world, but it's not necessarily what you want from the 2nd overall pick.
No, and, L.A., the L.A. Chargers, both L.A. teams with the Chargers, of course, in this case, they expect to make a long or a deep playoff push this year, and they should.
So they might want to keep him a little fresher than they did last year. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the offseason losers at wide receiver.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season 1, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Cam Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season 2 because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season 2 of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcast. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner. Homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season. And guess what? So are we. Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Segment 2, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Brian Johnson with you. As we look at the wide receivers to whom bad things happened in the offseason, we begin in Detroit, where bad things happen.
Yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Great things were happening for him from weeks 13 through 18. Target totals of 12, 12, 11, 11, 11, yeah, and 10.
That's nuts.
He had at least 8 catches in every game during that stretch, totaling 6 touchdowns, even ran one in. He was another league winner. We've mentioned a few of those, but it's going to be tough for him to repeat those performances because he fell into the fortune of many vacated targets. TJ Hockenson missed weeks 14 through 18. DeAndre Swift was out weeks 12 through 16. Those two players should be healthy to start the season. And Detroit also brought in DJ Chark, drafted Jameson Williams 12th overall. He's just going to need to be the only show in town like he was at the end of last year. So,
and he probably won't be. Yeah.
And I'm not buying in. And I know his ADP has dropped too over the last few months, but even where it's at now, it seems a little too high for me. I don't know. He's a great player, but he's just not going to see those opportunities. It doesn't seem like.
From the same draft class, Jaylen Waddle, offseason loser because obviously Tyreek Hill showed up. And, you know, I loved Waddle's rookie season, an unqualified success. But like Amon-Ra St. Brown, he benefited from a dearth of other quality receiving options in Miami. Now here comes Tyreek Hill, who has averaged a whopping 9 targets per game.
9 targets
per game over the past 2 years. And Miami just invested a first round, second round, and I think it was a fourth round pick, and $120 million in Tyreek Hill. So those 9 targets per game are going to hold up because they're highly incentivized to make sure that those 9 targets per game hold up for Tyreek Hill. Yes, Devontae Parker is gone, and that helps a little, but Cedric Wilson has got an absurd $23 million deal, and he'll likely slot into that spot and get similar usage to Parker. The good news for Waddle, by the way, is both Hill and Wilson have a history of running from the slot, and Waddle's effectiveness was far better outside, and he will be predominantly an outside receiver this year.
And won't see a ton of double coverage like he most likely did last year, too.
You'd assume not.
You would assume.
Tyreek Hill should be drawing most of that himself. So I'd put Waddle as a modest offseason loser, not a major offseason loser. What are your thoughts on another player that helped power people to championships in unheralded fashion, Hunter Renfro?
Yeah, Hunter Renfro is an enigma. He looks like a banker. But when given the opportunity, just an absolute beast. And speaking of opportunities, 128 targets last year. He was fifth in red zone targets among all players with 23.
Who'd have guessed?
And of course, things fell in his favor to get those targets. Henry Ruggs goes to prison. Darren Waller is hurt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had to lean on Renfrow, but Waller should be healthy come week one. And, oh, yeah, if you haven't heard, Davante Adams is now a Raider.
165 targets from last year.
Has proven to be pretty good when targeted in the red zone, too, even from the one-yard line.
I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes.
So, yeah, Hunter Renfrow, another guy, his ADP has slid since the draft and trading and offseason signings, all that stuff. But still a great player. I'm excited to watch this offense as a whole, but when you're speaking about him individually, I would not expect a repeat performance in those numbers from last year.
Another secondary receiver that may have a step back, Devonta Smith, because A.J. Brown is the new alpha receiver for the Eagles, and I don't think it's clear that Jalen Hurts is a good enough passer to feed two receivers in addition to Dallas Goedert.
Yep.
So, you mean, A.J. Brown and Dallas Goedert are 1A and 1B, right? And then where does that leave Smith? The other thing that worries me about Smith is he's just so small. He's so skinny. He's not going to get goal line looks. You feel like he needs big explosive plays to get things done. And I worry about him being very inconsistent in year two. And he was pretty inconsistent in year one as well. And the last thing I'll mention, the Eagles were a far better team in the second half of last year when they were running the ball constantly. And I wonder if they're going to have the same run-heavy emphasis this year.
And a much improved defense, too, in Philly as well. Yeah, so
sure
they might not need
way,
to be chasing points like they have been in the past.
Speaking of chasing, let's segue to Chase Claypool.
Yeah, brutal sophomore slump for Claypool last year. And now this has nothing to do with Ben Roethlisberger's retirement.
No.
Whether it's Seth Trombonsky or rookie quarterback baby hands Kenny Pickett. Both are an upgrade over Roethlisberger, but Claypool needs to be looking over his shoulder at rookie wide receiver George Pickens, taken 52nd overall. Might have been the first wide receiver taken in this draft, if not for tearing his ACL in the spring of 2021. He did
legitimate sounding character concerns.
But he didn't come back to play in Georgia's final four games, including the championship, so he should be pretty much a full go come week one for Pittsburgh. So, yeah, Chase Claypool, this is time to put up or shut up, but he's really just a guy. I would rather wait a couple rounds later and take Pickens over Claypool because I'm just...
So he's going off the board at wide receiver 40 in round 10. I'm actually intrigued by Claypool at that point because of the upgraded quarterback and Juju Smith-Schuster being gone. Pickens may need time to acclimate, and it's the third year for Claypool. I want to think he's going to mature and get it, bring it all together here. At round 10... I'm actually kind of interested in Claypool.
But in 2020, he had 9 touchdowns, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he was the red zone guy for Pittsburgh. Then Pat Freiermuth comes into town last year.
Point.
He's the red zone guy. George Pickens, he's not as muscular as Claypool. No one really is. But Pickens has good size, 6'3", 6'4". So could be wrong here, but still the addition of Pickens hurts a little bit. You would have liked him to see a little more trust. And also Calvin Austin, but he's kind of more of a slot guy who's drafted a little later than Pickens, but
your next
Claypool could be huge value, like you said.
Your next wide receiver loser is Elijah Moore from the Jets, wide receiver 31 off the board, round 8. You may recall last year he had a very lackluster start to his rookie year, and then he had a terrific middle of the season. Then he suffered hip, groin, quad injuries, and then got COVID. And all that together basically ended his season. So Elijah Moore is now going to have to share time with another fast, explosive downfield receiver and a bigger, taller one, Garrett Wilson. And some worry me that Wilson's bigger size is going to make him a better downfield target and a better goal line target than Elijah Moore. And that Elijah Moore is going to start getting more balls underneath and shorter stuff and try to let him do some of the electric things that he can do after the catch. But I would prefer to have the ball going downfield to my receivers, and I'm nervous that Garrett Wilson's going to take some of that.
And Braxton Berrios stole a lot of targets late in the season, and they brought him back to a sizable or significant contract extension. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Let's go to the tight end. We've got 2.5 tight ends to talk through. Let's start with a Loser that I don't think we expected, Mike Gesicki, currently going off the board as tight end 11, round 11.
Yeah, and he's a loser for the same reasons that really
Jalen Waddle's
a loser, because Gesicki is a tight end who's not really a tight end. He's a wide receiver. He ran 92% of his routes from the slot or out wide. So really, for all the reasons that you mentioned for Jalen Waddle, is why Mike Gesicki is a loser. And he's going before guys, so I know we're kind of poo-pooing on the Bears, but we called Cole Kmet a winner last week, and numerous tight ends going after Gesicki, where I'd rather take these guys, because I just don't see a ton of opportunities for Gesicki this year like you saw last year.
Similar story for Darren Waller, really, because we've already talked through Hunter Renfrow and the effect of Davante Adams, who's always been a target hog. He's averaged 153 targets per season over the last 4 years, and that probably doesn't change here given what the Raiders had to give up to get Adams. And then you've also got Hunter Renfrow, though, who's established himself last year as a totally legitimate and basically an alpha receiver. And like Waller, Renfrow works over the middle of the field. That doesn't help Waller.
And the 23 red zone targets, too. He's very effective in the red zone.
Exactly.
Renfrow was.
Here's the other thing is Adams is an elite goal line threat. He has the most touchdowns from inside the 5 yard line of any receiver over the last 2 years. He's got one more than Adam Thielen, although Thielen's it's like 6-7 fewer games played over the last 2 years. There's a lot of things working against Darren Waller here, currently going off the board at tight end 5 in round 4. You know me, Brian, I feel very strongly about trying to get one of the high end tight ends. I think Waller's just going to have some games where he just doesn't get the ball. There's just only so much ball to go around, and Adams and Renfrow are going to get fed, and including near the stripe. And I'm nervous about Waller having inconsistent production.
Yeah, I'm with you. Waller is pretty much tight end 4 now after Pitts, Andrews, Kelsey, and then Kittle kind of right after him. Mm-hmm. But then our guy, Dallas Goedert, at least my guy, a couple rounds later, maybe like 3 rounds later than Waller. I would kind of rather wait and grab Goedert than take Waller in the late fourth round.
Yeah. Then let's talk about tight end 31 going off the board in round 26. Who is it, Brian?
Dan Arnold, who was going, he was getting drafted within the first 18 rounds as tight end, at least like 24. I mean, he was a great backup tight end before Jacksonville traded for Evan Engram. Now, Dan Arnold could be traded, and I kind of hope he is.
He's the always traded Dan Arnold.
He's guaranteed. They're not going to cut him. They can't cut him. He's guaranteed too much money by Jacksonville. But Arnold, kind of in the mold of Gesicki, ran roughly 75% of his routes from the slot or outside. He's kind of more of a wide receiver. But so is Evan Engram, who, again, Jacksonville signed in the offseason. And presumably, Engram will be the tight end one for Jacksonville. That said, Engram has 21 career drops. Most by a tight end since 2017, also known to get injured. So I'm not fully convinced that Engram like is the guy tight end for Jacksonville. So I'm not out entirely on Arnold. And new head coach Doug Peterson for Jacksonville, who previously coached the Eagles, has done some damage with two tight ends in the past, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz. So, yeah, Arnold was really getting drafted as a tight end, too, in every draft I was in. But since they signed Engram, he's really not getting drafted right now, unfortunately.
How much does a speeding ticket cost you these days in the state of Minnesota?
I'm glad I'm not going to find out.
I bet it's for a 73 and a 55 or a 60. I think it's 60 where you were. 73 and a 60, I bet you that's a $80 ticket.
Really? I would guess like $200.
I think you have to be like 20 over to get into the 200 range. Is my guess. Not positive about that.
The fact
you only got a warning in essence, you made $83 on your way here.
I should go buy 83 lottery tickets after this.
They're $2 each now.
Okay, so 41 and a half.
There you go. 41 and a half lottery tickets. Thank you for listening to the this edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. We'll be back next week for more. Not positive what the topic is next week. I don't remember.
I know Scott Fish has pretty much penciled himself in. Scott Fish Bowl talk will be on.
Yeah, they're probably going to be true. And we'll probably talk a little bit about Guillotine Leagues, which should have launched at that point. So we'll get into the 2022 Guillotine League season as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Back in 1 week. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.